Hi, everyone. This is Tom Salami. Welcome back to the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Another great episode for you today. I spoke with Kit Yi O'Young. She is the head of the Medical Devices Group at Sandbox AQ, which is an alphabet spinout. So it's a tech company looking at medical devices. And Kit's got a great med tech story. One that I wish I did a better job sort of drawing out of her. I feel like sometimes I do an interview and I'd like to have another shot at it. Kit's one of those people who brought so much to the conversation. I just feel like there's more I could have unpacked, but there's a lot there. I know you'll enjoy it, including a story at the end about Kit's role in founding iRhythm. So great med tech story there. Before that, Chris Newmark, of course, visits with his Newmarkers newsmakers. Don't miss that. A few programming notes. We won't be putting out a Device Talks Weekly next week, nor will we be having a Device Talks Tuesday. We will, however, put out an excellent episode of the Intuitive Talks podcast. That will come on a Tuesday, so you'll have something to listen to on the way to Grandma's house, or if you're not celebrating Thanksgiving, on the way to wherever you're going. But I know you'll enjoy that episode of Intuitive Talks. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a Device Talks Weekly podcast. Of course, don't forget, you can register for Device Talks Boston. Registration is open. I've been announcing speakers on LinkedIn, and we'll start updating that website. But it's going to be a fantastic time. Make sure you go to boston.devicetalks.com to register. So now let's get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Newmarker, how are you, sir?
Good to be here, Tom. Good to be here. Happy Friday. We're recording on another Friday morning.
Happy Friday. We're recording 10:35 Eastern, the Friday before Thanksgiving.
Yes,
Chris,
yes.
Newmarker, any big plans next week?
Oh, you know, having the in-laws over, so.
Very nice.
Gonna have a nice big turkey in the oven. We didn't win a turkey last night. There was a turkey bingo at my at our kids' elementary school,
no.
But they just yeah, no turkey won. They did win some fidget spinners at the end.
Well, yeah, that's always
that was exciting.
That's exciting.
They got the consolation.
Did you win anything pumpkin related or no? No pumpkin gifts were offered.
There was a pumpkin pie.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a great application of pumpkin for sure.
Our bingo cards weren't delivering, Tom. They just weren't delivering.
Gosh.
But, you know, I was gonna say so. This morning, our oldest had like a publishing party at his class.
Well.
So, right, you know, so because he wrote a nice little story about being stuck in a traffic jam with dad. It was luckily G-rated, so that's good. you know, it's like I was stuck in, like, you know, like I wondered when we'd get out of that traffic jam on the way to my baseball game. It's like, oh wow, that's a nice little opener, you know.
Wow.
It's good. So
was there actually a traffic jam in Minnesota? I've never seen one before.
It's been a lot of road work around.
Oh,
where
all
I am,
right,
so.
All right, all right. I thought everything was.
It was like, oh wait,
15 minutes from something else in Minnesota. I thought that was the
road work clearing up now. The orange cones are disappearing now that winter's coming. So my son needed to bring donut holes, so I had to stop at there's a nice little place near us, like Duffner's Deli and Donuts, and I got our oldest Alex 2 dozen donut holes to bring to his class.
All right.
Today, and
sure.
And got myself some donuts. I got the whole family donuts, so, you know, a good way to start a Friday, get some donuts. I got a deep fried cinnamon roll that was still warm,
mm-hmm.
with some cinnamon sugar sprinkled on it.
I have fond memories. My father would work Saturday nights, and he'd every Sunday morning on the way home, he'd stop at Dunkin' Donuts and he'd get a box of donuts for us, and they'd be sitting
on
the kitchen table on Sunday morning. That was our Sunday morning tradition.
Best dad ever.
It was very kind of him to do. Yes, so he worked very late
really
on Saturday,
nice.
So
yeah.
The donuts were still kind of fresh. Yeah.
Wow.
So donuts are great, and
it's
I love
fantastic.
Alliteration. Duffner's Deli and Donuts.
Yes, Duffner's
All right.
Deli.
I love the
donuts.
D's, triple D. Way to go, Duffner's.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
They've got a big donut shaped awning that they've put up in front of their place at the
okay.
mini mall.
I'm picturing the giant donut from the Simpsons monorail episode. Is it that big?
No, No, it's just like a little wood thing, right. But they, it's good. You know, nothing like starting a Friday with a good donut. So, and
well, I've got my. Thanks for asking. I've got my son coming home tomorrow for Thanksgiving.
How's your son, Tom?
Well, thanks for asking, Chris. He's doing great. Sorry. He'll be coming home tomorrow for a whole week, unless there was more donut story.
I'm done, Tom. This is better. Are you going to pick him up, or is he just going to fly in?
I am. Well,
are you going to go pick him up? Theo, just fly in now. I'm done.
Yeah, just fly in. Figure it out when you get home. Yeah. Grab a bus. Grab an Uber. Yeah. No, we'll be picking him up.
That's awesome.
He's going for the whole week, so we're excited about that.
Oh, that's awesome.
We'll be going up to Maine for the day, but otherwise, I think we're just going to chill. Although I forgot to, I was going to try to take Wednesday off, and I didn't block off my Wednesday on my calendar. And like yesterday, like I got hit with 3 meetings like on Wednesday before Thanksgiving. I'm like, what's up with that, people? I'll do it. I'll take it for the team. It's fine. I love my job, but it's one of those things where you're like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take Wednesday off. Then it's like, no, you're not.
You gotta move on that.
I should have moved on it. So hoping the people I'm meeting with on Wednesday aren't listening to this podcast. It's fine. Happy to meet with you folks. You're all very lovely. We'll have a great time.
Yeah. Be awesome.
I'm not digging ditches here. This is a joy of a job to have. So.
We're not working in a coal mine. We're not,
No, we're not. I think I probably shared the story in the podcast before, but when Theo was young, we walked by some street work being done, and there was a DPW man digging ditches, and he looked up at my 5-year-old son and said, "Stay in school, kid." So now I think I credit him for getting my son to go to college. So grateful to the. Yeah, because there's nothing harder than digging a ditch.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I mean, there.
Honest to God, truth.
I have so much respect for people who work hard for the money. But yes, I feel gratitude that I have this job that I enjoy so much that I get to getting paid to sit around and joke around with you right now. But this is great. It's awesome. Yep. Living the dream, man.
Thankful.
We're living the dream.
We are very thankful.
There's a lot to be thankful about. So.
So do we have a bounty of Newmarkers newsmakers?
I think cornucopia.
We've been doing this podcast for almost 5 years, Chris.
Yeah,
Mark,
man.
And I still have trouble saying Newmarkers newsmakers. There it is. Newmarkers newsmakers.
Yep.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yep. Do we have a bounty? A cornucopia?
Cornucopia. The horn of plenty is full of.
The horn of plenty of newsmakers.
So you just sit back, people. And enjoy your early pumpkin pie here. We're gonna
undo your top button because we're gonna shove some news down your gullet.
Yeah, that's right. You're gonna take a big post news nap after this. Newmarkers newsmakers.
What is number 5, Chris Newmark?
Well, number 5 is another Trump appointment related to MedTech. We've got Dr. Oz is nominated to be CMS director.
That was an interesting one. I did not see that one coming. Of course he has.
Yeah, I mean, he did. Run for Senate in Pennsylvania like a few years ago. And had a lot of support from Donald Trump. So,
And he has, has connections to MedTech, and he has put forth plans regarding reimbursement before. I believe I was reading he was in favor of everyone having access to Medicare Advantage plans and trying to get people health care that way. So, I mean, he's definitely bringing experience and connection to healthcare.
Yeah.
He's got his history of what he did on TV and stuff he's sold, but he does obviously have a background, and he's also, and if I knew this, I'd forgotten it, but he had laid claim to being the inventor of the MitraClip, which of course was developed by eValve and acquired by Abbott. Now, there was an article that I read where someone had talked to Fred Sangor, who was the interventional cardiologist. Actually, we had a Device Talks West, not this year, but last year, who kind of just suggested that Dr. Oz was not as involved as Dr. Oz portrayed. He said, this is the quote, "I think the engineers and people at eValve always cringe a little bit when they see Mehmet taking a lot of, you know, basically claiming responsibility for what was a really extraordinary team effort.
Wow.
And he was a small to almost no player in that team. So in my conversations, and that was a quote from Fred St. Goor. So in my conversations about eval, I hadn't heard Dr. Oz mentioned, but it appears as if he is one of the patent holders, if not the patent holder.
Wow.
For the MitraClip. So he does know a bit about MedTech. He obviously had a role in at least coming up with the concept for MitraClip, which is a very, very important MedTech medical device that's helped a lot of people. And it's going to be interesting to see where he goes forward. I mean, it's kind of hard to say he's not qualified for this role, or at least doesn't have the a background that you can look at and see a path to him leading CMS. So we'll see.
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, cardiac. I mean, he was a cardiothoracic surgeon, a professor at Columbia University. And as you said, he's got experience in med tech. So, I mean, he knows, you know, as CMS makes decisions on covering, med tech, I mean, we'll have someone in charge of CMS who like understands, you know, like kind of the medical device development process. You know, that was kind of the reaction that Scott Whitaker at AvMed had. You know, like kind of, you know, noted that, you know, Dr. Oz has a firsthand experience with medical technology. You know, and understands the impact that, you know, those technologies can have. So hopeful. Here's to hoping this is like good news then for MedTech. You know, if he takes over CMS and.
All right. Well, we'll see on that. Well, let's go move to number four, because no marker was number four.
Number four on the list, we've got Supira. Do you think I'm pronouncing that right?
Supira. Supira is correct, yeah.
Supira, yeah. Medical. They announced that they've begun patient enrollment in a U.S. Early feasibility trial for their PVAD device, the percutaneous ventricular assist device. But, you know, I mean, Abiomed, of course, is, you know, really well known to, you know, people and MedTech, you know, acquired by J&J. Just, it's been a few years now, right? Like, since Abiomed got acquired. But, we've got this kind of, like, whole host of companies now, like, you know, coming out with their own catheter-delivered, you know, heart support, you know, pump-type, you know, devices. And, you know, this is one of them. And, they've begun their enrollment and, you know, in this trial for the PVAD device.
Absolutely. We had the CEO of Supira, Nathan Salunka, on the podcast, I think it was a year and a half ago. And he was also at Device Talks West last year. But ShifaMed has it's part of the ShifaMed incubator. And it's got a really unique approach to building companies, and it intentionally looks for opportunities like this one, where you can have a company, not this is the exclusive way of their innovation, but they will look at situations where you have a company like Abiomed kind of laying rails or laying track, and then a company created by ShifaMed coming in with I think they would suggest more advanced technologies or the next generation technology. So nice to see that they're making some headway here on what's a very important device. And clearly, you know, Abiomed's commanded quite a price from J&J, so this would be an area where you could see someone else stepping in and acquiring a company like this. I don't know if that would be Edwards. I don't know if that would be Abbott.
Yeah.
But clearly someone could come in and take this one.
There's some opportunities there. And, you know, there was also, you know, news this week from Second Heart Assist, which is out of Salt Lake City, but they've got a device that's a catheter-delivered heart assist device called the Whisper device, and they just had some successful case studies, they said, down in South America. So definitely a lot going on in that space right now.
Absolutely. All right. Well, good stuff, Chris Newmarker. What's number three?
Hey, number three on the list, we've got GE Healthcare announcing positive results from a new study of their Portrait Mobile continuous monitoring system. This is like a wearable continuous monitoring system for post surgical care. And they did a study with Cleveland Clinic and found that this reported a lot of positive results for what this could do with kind of like the whole operations at a hospital. I mean, they found that the patients monitored with Portrait Mobile had averaged like fewer than three alarms per day, Yeah. I mean, they found that, you know, they were getting, you know, oxygen therapy adjustments, you know, 60% more than just compared to, you know, the routine monitoring that would be going on after surgery. And that, you know, they were finding that the real-time alerts from this system was enabling, like, more timely responses to all kinds of things that might be going on with you, like when you're, you know, in the hospital after surgery. So, you know, this, you know, just all kinds of like positive results with it. So that's some exciting news. Like this it sounds like it's making a difference.
No, that's interesting news. It kind of reminded me of a story that Dandy Pierce told at Device Talks West, just about the technologies that Stryker's working on just to help caregivers create a more, I guess, effective environment for nurses and doctors in the hospital setting, helping them track their activities more closely, but really just trying to reduce the environmental pressures that add to the burnout of healthcare workers. So I think anything you can do to make alarms and things more effective definitely helps the patient, but certainly helps the physicians and the nurses as well. So
right. I mean, yeah, healthcare providers across the country right now have, you know, staffing shortages and, you know, making the job just a little less tough for people working at hospitals would be awesome. So, you know, that's, you know, on top of like the people getting better care after their surgeries, you know, making sure that, you know, it doesn't like suck to work in a hospital, you know,
absolutely.
You know, we need these people with experience to, you know, keep on working there and, you know, helping to care for people. So
for sure. Yeah. All right, Chris Neumacher, let's go on to number two.
Well, and number two on the list, we have Medtronic's second quarter earnings, in which, you know, it was a street beating earnings report. That's good news for the world's largest medtech company. They raised their 2025 guidance. But kind of more interesting, like if you go to Mass Device, our associate editor, Sean Hooley, has has all kinds of like updates on like things going on across Medtronic's abyss right now. And there's a lot of, you know, I mean, they've had, you know, some challenges to like overcome over there, but you know, there was a lot of positive news coming out of Medtronic. I mean, including you know, they're seeing growth with Pulsed Select Pulsed Field Ablation System. I mean, that there's just like so much promise around PFA for you know, treating AFib, and you know, they're ramping up commercial availability of Affera. You know, they're you know, seeing like a continued adoption of their ABLE ecosystem of spine implants, and then, you know, diabetes, you know, which, you know, had a lot of challenges to overcome in recent years. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're seeing double digit revenue growth right now with you know, continued adoption of the MiniMed 780G automated insulin delivery system. So just a lot of like good news actually coming out of Medtronic.
That's great. No, it's you're right. It's nice to get some good news out of the industry's biggest company.
Totally.
But you number two doesn't mention surgical robotics, Chris. Any news on the Hugo front?
Well, you know, that is number one. I mean, like, that was the big, I'd say the big news out of that earnings report was, their Medtronic is moving forward with plans to, they say they're going to submit their Hugo surgical robotic to the FDA next year in the first quarter of 2025.
Well, that's great news. We've been seeing some progress on the surgical robotic front. Of course, we had Ottava's news a week or two ago, and we'll definitely look forward to seeing Hugo move forward. We have Da Vinci 5 earlier this year.
They had
laid a lot of groundwork with the FDA prior to their going public. So it'll be interesting to see where Medtronic is in their conversations with the FDA. I'm sure they're farther along or far along. Related to Hugo, potentially, Medtronic also this week acquired a company, Fortimedics, which makes flexible surgical instruments. And just reading from Steve Bell, who's always a great follow on LinkedIn and follows the surgical robotics space very closely. He said that Fortimedics gives flexible instrument capabilities which can easily be applied to Hugo RAS as a flexible tipped, smaller diameter lap instrument.
Wow.
Or it can be applied to create a single arm or a single port, or it could be applied to an endoluminal robot. So Ford Medics Surgical, it could fit into Hugo's future. So
very interesting.
Nice to see some progress being made on the Hugo front.
So this tuck-in acquisition that we reported on this week at Mass Device sounds like it's like Medtronic, like potentially adding some technology that could, you know, boost Hugo even more. So fantastic.
Exactly. All right, Chris Neumarker. Well, happy Thanksgiving to you and
happy Thanksgiving to you and yours too, Tom.
I don't think we'll have an episode next week, so we'll be back in a couple of weeks with a Neumarker's Newsmakers.
Oh, so a lot to be thankful about. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Well, Kit Yeo Young, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Tom.
Excited to hear about Sandbox AQ. I'm on your website. I'm going through every page, trying to understand all that you do. It's a great story, and I definitely want to unpack that in this conversation. But before we get there, of course, anyone who listens to the podcast know we want to learn about the person and how they found their way into the medtech industry. So, what was your entry point into medtech? What was it that drove you to be part of this great industry?
Yeah, I like this opening, and I would say I chose medtech because of my love of biology, of building, and for creating something from scratch. And I came to this realization at different times of my learning journey, I would say. Like, for example, like I discovered my love of biology when I first came to the US. I was born and raised in Hong Kong, and the curriculum at that time, it's just so jam-packed. Like, we had to learn so much, like physics, biology, chemistry, calculus, like everything, like all at once. So growing up in Hong Kong, like it's all basically about memorization and learning how to study and test well. But when I moved to Hawaii, like, you know, the course load was like almost cut in half. And I took AP biology and I just fell in love with it and just learning about the biological systems that actually have time to absorb and appreciate how amazing and intricate and beautiful they are. So like that was like the initial hook in high school, my love of biology. And then next, like I discovered my love of building when I was at Duke. My senior year, I took a course. It's called like Devices for People with Disabilities. And it set up very interestingly. I was partnered up with another senior in my class in biomedical engineering. And we're paired with a healthcare professional. And our job is to design products for that person, for her to do her job. And at the time, it was a nurse that worked with children with sensory defects. And she needs like different things to really like, you know, test like people's sense of smell, touch, sight, and hearing. And she has this whole bag of different gadgets. And I was like, hey, you know what? Like, I don't want to be carrying this bag all the time. I always forget things. So can you build something that is like all inclusive that allows me to like, you know, have everything that I need very conveniently, and I can like work with kids and not having to worry about where my things at. So that was like so personal and so touching and so focused. And I just really love that aspect of like, you know, building for someone else.
That's great. Going back a moment, if you don't mind, may I ask what brought your company from Hong Kong, your family from Hong Kong to Hawaii? What was the move based around?
Yeah. So my family decided to move to the United States after Tiananmen Square, actually.
Okay.
After that, we're in Hong Kong. We realized that things might change. Let's start with sending me to high school so that like I'm on the path to, you know, go to college here in the United States while the family continue to like go through the immigration process, which is very lengthy to move to the States. So I was actually the first one that came to the US, went to a boarding school by myself in Hawaii. And yeah, that was it.
May I ask, you still have some family in Hong Kong? I mean, obviously your family wasn't wrong in its assessment of where things would go.
Yeah, I still have aunts and uncles in Hong Kong. My family, you know, my mom and dad, my brother have moved to the States now. My childhood friends, they're all still in Hong Kong.
Wow.
And it's just changed so much. I always said to people, like, I wish more people have seen Hong Kong when I was growing up, you know, before 97. It was a magical place. It was a lot of exciting things happening. And now, like, it's a little sad. Like, I just talked to my friend recently, and, like, she decides to move to the UK because, like, the lack of opportunity in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I still go back from time to time.
Well, we're sorry what's happened, but we're glad it brought you here. So when you went over to Duke, so it's a long way from Hawaii, obviously worth the trip, but did you know about, like, a lot of people don't even say, they weren't even aware there was a medical device industry before they really started studying it. Did you have some sort of inclination of that? You had the love of biology. Were you thinking maybe I'll be a doctor? Like, where was life's stream kind of guiding you?
I would say kind of like building off of the course that I took, that was senior year. I immediately went into graduate school, my PhD program at Duke, and continued to build.
Okay.
So I think, like, it's the combination of engineering and biology that interests me. And I did think about going to medical school, like, you know, doing the MD PhD program. And I took gross anatomy with, like, first year grad med students. And I also love it. Like, I just love dissections and, like, looking at the bodies. Like, I would totally be like a cardiac surgeon if I'm not like an engineer. But at the end of the day, like, that would mean, like, I would spend more than 10 years in Durham, North Carolina, and I was, like, looking for something else.
I hear it's lovely, but I understand what you're saying. And I love that you had an internship. You started out at NeuroPace.
Yeah.
Which is one of my... it's probably the first medical device startup that I remember. I started covering the industry, like, in 97, so it was already one of the cooler companies I talked about. How did you find your way there? And... again, what did you see your career sort of looking like? Did you want to be a startup kind of person who is starting companies? Did you want to go a big company? Did you even have that kind of plan? Were you just hopping from stone to stone as you figured out what was next?
I would say my internship at NeuroPace was my second year of grad school.
Okay.
So my PhD advisor, he was actually really well connected with the industry. Like, when Guyton is still around, and then, like, he was working very closely with, like, some of the projects there, and I was debating whether I'm someone who's more suited for the industry versus academia. So he let me, you know, explore Bay Area for a summer, so, like, hooked me up with an internship at NeuroPace there. So I remember, like, Ben Plex, Frank Fisher, like, you know, being like a hardware engineer, an intern, and, like, writing test codes and stuff. And I almost didn't go back to do, because it was just so much fun in the Bay Area.
That's great. And I see you had an internship at Boston Scientific a little later, but I want to kind of focus on your work at Proteus Digital Health, which was, again, one of those companies. I remember the sensors and the pills, and it was going to be like the groundbreaking digital health company, because it had an application that actually had, well, I don't want to diss other digital health companies, but you could see the function pure and clear that what Proteus was going to do. How'd you end up at Proteus? Maybe you could tell folks a little bit about Proteus. Some folks listening might not remember it. But what drew you to Proteus, and what were you working on?
Yeah, so Proteus was a digital health company. And when I first entered, there were three projects, actually, two in cardiology, and the digital pill project was actually like a pet project. I was the second full-time hired onto that one.
Oh, okay.
And the premise was to put a microchip into medication to track medication adherence. Mm-hmm. And you can couple that with physiologic metrics to help physicians titrate your medication that way. So, maybe we'll come back and talk about biodesign, because, like, Proteus and biodesigns to me was really the fork in the road for me.
Okay.
But I went into Proteus with a notion that I want to learn clinical study design, because what I learned at Stanford Biodesign is that a clinical study design, especially in the early stage, could just make or break the whole technology, the whole innovation trajectory. So at that time, I was just only 1 year out of my PhD program. I don't know anything about clinical studies. So, like, I really, like, you know, learn on the job, like, running seven of their early feasibility study at Proteus for this digital pill project. I learned a lot, and the use case that I still really love today is using that technology for digitally observed therapy for TB treatment. Mm-hmm. I see that has a really great value.
And Proteus didn't ultimately make it. And I don't know when you moved. You were there for 6 years. So you were there for a good time. And then you went to Profusa, which is a company I'm not aware of. Tell me a bit about, is it Profusa? Am I saying it correctly?
Yeah, you were saying it correctly.
What were you working on there?
Yeah, I worked on a technology that is an implantable sensor, like a base of hydrogel to measure tissue oxygen. So you begin to see the theme here that like I pick technology that is like a little bit out there, a little bit ahead of its time. But how to really grow it in the early stage is what I love doing. So the use case for the Profusa technology, the transcutaneous oxygen sensor, is to detect wound healing potential for peripheral artery disease. So oftentimes people with peripheral artery disease, blood supplies to a wound area is insufficient for effective wound healing, and this Proteus like hydrogel sensor, you can interrogate it optically, so you can actually measure like the oxygen level increase after like a treatment and intervention such as revascularization to make sure that there's wound healing potential there. So it was a crazy idea. Like, can you imagine a little hydrogel like a size of like a vermicelli noodle, and then like you insert it underneath the skin to optically interrogate like oxygen level? Like, yeah, that was the idea.
It sounds amazing. I want to get more, follow your career a bit more, but I do want to just kind of cover your education, because you went to Duke. You've got a postgraduate course at University of California, San Francisco, postdoctoral fellowship at biodesign at Stanford. You did some Harvard Business Online. You have an MIT certificate in here in quantum computing. Stanford University graduate of business. And I'm not trying to do anything other than I want to check all these boxes. Then you have a PhD in biomedical engineering. So education is kind of important to you. What kind of advice do you give to young people? I mean, are you just an education fiend that you just kept wanting more and more and more information? Or did you find reasons to go back to school? And if you're mentoring someone who's just starting out, do you suggest that they follow your path? Do you suggest that your path was unnecessary? How do you view your many degrees on LinkedIn and certificates?
I'm definitely someone who gravitates towards learning. Like, okay. I contemplated, you know, getting an MD while doing my PhD, or like after several years of Proteus, I was like, oh, maybe I'll go get my MBA. Like, I just love absorbing new information. And without the degree, nowadays, like, I try to pick courses that really will upskill me and be useful to me in my current job. So I think my general advice for people would be, like, you know, carve out the time. Like, you'd be surprised how much it will benefit you. It's not easy. Like, you know, taking these like online courses, it takes up my entire Saturday morning, for example, just to absorb the material and do the homework. But it's really satisfying when I was like, huh, I remember learning this, and then like be able to like look at my notes and trying to apply it. Like, I think I love those kind of moments. It's like, okay, someone has taught me that before. Let me like use it on my job.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice. So let's get into some of your more recent experiences. You were at X, the Moonshot Factory, which I'm not sure if I can recall hearing. Obviously, Alphabet would be next, and I know about Alphabet. But what was X, the Moonshot Factory? And should I know about it, and am I a dummy for not?
You might have heard about it, and you just don't know yet.
Yeah, maybe. So... That's true. I'll pretend I heard about it once you tell me what it is. Oh, right, that. Yes, of course.
So Google X was the home of, like, Verily when they first, like, you know, spun out. Like, Waymo was born from Google X.
Of course,
Loon,
okay.
The balloon that delivered internet. Like, that all came from Google X. And I was aware of this opportunity at X through actually Stanford again. They reached out to Stanford because they're looking for medtech people to work on one of their moonshots. And I came across that opportunity and I just can't pass out. Like, how fun would it be to be at Google X to work on 10X impact project with like a pretty good budget, let's say.
Yeah, right. No, that's great. And in my defense, I didn't see Google X. I saw X, and maybe what's gone on with Twitter has just completely messed up my mind. So, but did you see the move to Google as remaining within MedTech? Did you see you're drifting at all, or did you see you were kind of following MedTech's future? I mean, if you look at your career path, you seem to be careening toward this intersection of MedTech and IT or technology. But what did the move to Google X, how did that feel to you?
It was still very much focused on MedTech. I was hired into a project where we use EEG to diagnose depression and anxiety.
Oh, wow.
So it still has that MedTech context, but like I would say, exposure to X just helped me upskill other areas. For example, I really learned the whole 0-to-1 playbook at Google X. There's so many useful like heuristics that like we learned there that it's just so applicable to what I do now in MedTech or even just in product development. So I think I really love my time at X. And I was there for 4 years after Sandbox AQ kind of like spun out together. So like I definitely have my share of X. I was like, now it's time to kind of come back out and like have this sort of life again.
Excellent. So, and then you were a product manager at Alphabet, but I assume that's a continuation of what you're doing at Google X. So now let's talk about Sandbox AQ. Tell us a bit about your, describe quickly as an enterprise SaaS company combining AI and quantum tech, but talk a bit about what Sandbox AQ is and where you fit into it, because as I mentioned, if folks go online and look at your website, you cover a lot of different industries, you've got a very wide wingspan.
Yeah, so Sandbox AQ is a B2B company, and our notion is to deliver deep tech and AI solution to address some of the biggest challenges in life sciences, in medical diagnostic, in cybersecurity, also in navigation. We born out of Google X when we're still like a group incubated within Google X, and we spun out, you know, led by Jack Kaderi and Eric Schmidt in 2022. If I remember correctly. And that's kind of like our history. Our kind of like special sauce is LQM, large quantitative model. So unlike, you know, nowadays when people think about AI company and LLM, LLM is trained on vast amounts of text data, right? So LQM, in contrast, is large quantitative model that is trained on numeric and quantitative data.
Okay.
Take my business unit, which is called AQ Med. We focus in on medical application. Take that as an example. We're developing a magnetocardiography device for cardiac diagnostics. And how we use the A and the Q is that we use quantum sensors or high-performance sensors to collect magnetic signal that is coming from the heart. And we use AI to do signal processing, disease classification to help physicians make cardiac diagnosis.
So are you in charge of developing, are you basically a medical device within this medical device company within Sandbox AQ developing your own devices? Are you working with others and helping them develop their devices? I won't tell you what I saw on the internet until I ask you the question. Are you a medical device company within Sandbox AQ?
We're a medical device group within Sandbox AQ. Yeah. I have a group of 18 physicists, engineers, data scientists, machine learning specialists within our team. And we build hardware and software for medical diagnostics, starting with cardiology.
And do you identify do you work or function as a medical device company does, identifying clinical shortcomings or areas of opportunity and build devices to bring... to eliminate or relieve those problems?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm true to my like Stanford biodesign training of addressing unmet clinical need. So the unmet clinical need that we're trying to address is heart attack triage in the emergency department.
Okay.
So how do we make it quicker and more accurate so that there's less clogging of the ED, patients can be triaged safely and quickly, or those require interventions can like receive like revascularization in a timely manner.
So where are you? Well, this is I'm like a tubes and plastic kind of med tech guy. So when we start talking about LQMs and such, I get a little dizzy. So how are you interacting with the clinical settings and helping and working with doctors and physicians, sort of identifying again, their needs, and how are you developing the products to help them, to help meet those needs? Like, how are you interacting with the clinical setting?
Yeah, I would say definitely through early feasibility studies.
Okay.
I'm a strong proponent of getting out there and make contact with the real world as quickly as possible. So like, even if I think back 2 years ago with our technology, like we're really forcing ourselves to like, you know, deploy it to UCSF and really try it and see if we can measure the signal. And then just the whole process of like deploying a prototype to the clinical setting, you get so much feedback. You observe so much just by being there. And that's how we kind of like refine and iterate and continue to like build out our clinical advisory network. I think that's how we learn when it comes to product development, especially here at Sandbox AQ.
What are you physically developing and making available for review and for testing? Are you providing, is there an actual device that you're sending out to people in a box? Is it something that's being applied to technologies they already have? What are you building?
Yeah, we're building like a bedside form factor, magnetocardiography scanner. So right now the size is almost like a size of a bed with like a panel and an array of sensor over it. So that to take a MCG measurement, magnetocardiography measurement, you precision that array of sensors over the chest. The patient stays still for like less than 5 minutes. And then the data will like, you know, be collected that captures the entire cardiac cycle. And what my data science and AI team does is that they do signal processing, because like this cardiac signal, magnetic signal from the heart is so small, we have to filter out all the interference that is around and really pick up the cardiac signal. And then once we have that image of what that magnetic field would look like over a cardiac cycle, we apply, you know, machine learning to detect certain features that might be indicative of something like acute coronary syndrome.
So we're entering the part of the interview where I'm likely going to ask a lot of dumb questions, but is there something currently being used to develop to measure the magnetic signal from the heart? And if so, what?
Yes. Yeah, so right now our device is at two centers, Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City,
prior
and also
to
at the
developing
Mayo Clinic.
Device, are you replacing something, or are you introducing a new metric or measurement for cardiac care?
Ah, got it. Okay, so I would say magnetocardiography in a clinical setting is a new metric.
Okay.
However, MCG has been invented in the 60s. There's a lot of research study done since the early 2000s. All of them are like reporting single center experience of how it could help facilitate heart attack triage.
Interesting.
So we're replacing the technology they used then, which is called like SQUID, superconducting quantum interference device that requires like either shielding or cooling to do so. And we're just using it, upgrading it with like a new technology, new sensor that doesn't have those usability requirements.
Okay. So we'll just keep focusing on this. What will you be able to, how will you be able to diagnose the severity of a heart attack better with the MCG measurement? What is it able to see that isn't currently visible?
Right. And this is an area of like active research. So let me kind of like call out some of the research done in the early 2000s. MCG was particularly useful in detecting NSTEMI heart attack, non-ST elevated myocardial infarction. And this is due to the nature of like ECG versus MCG. ECG is conductive based, current needs to like, you know, be picked up by the electrodes that is placed on the body. And depending on the body composition, that or the motion artifact, that could affect the signal integrity. But magnetic signal coming from the body, like we're essentially transparent. So like there's none of those like impedance changes as you pick up this magnetic signal non-invasively and over the body. So an EKG and MCG, they're like related, and you can like use the equation to solve for it. So in a way, it is a updated version of looking at cardiac current.
Wow. Okay. Very cool. So this is the cardiac. What are some other products that you're developing?
This is it.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
I truly believe that, like, you know, for our team, we need to focus. So our goal is to get to FDA clearance for a useful clinical indication as quickly as possible. MCG devices are out there. They're FDA cleared 510K devices for general purpose use, like for looking at magnetic signal. But physicians, because they're not trained in medical school on how to interpret MCG data, they never really learn it. So there's no uptick. Mm-hmm. And what they really need is like some guidance as to like, what is a clinical problem that I can use, that I can solve using MCG. And that's kind of like the focus that we'll be placing, finding an unmet clinical need and craft a specific indication for MCG.
Interesting. Okay. And I didn't mean to suggest you aren't doing enough by just working on this. This does sound like a significant undertaking. So, but how does this, so, and I may be asked, this is the point where I may be asking you to repeat yourself because I just want to get clarity in my head. Where are you with clinical testing in this? And I guess, what is the future of this product you're working on right now? How do you see it looking in the future? Again, with the caveat that everyone knows that you're dealing with the FDA and proving that things work and there's no certainty. But on a best case scenario, what is the future of cardiac look like? And when would you foresee it possibly reaching the market?
Great question. So we're still in R&D. We're actively running two research study at two centers. I still think that we have a little bit R&D to go. We're planning for a pivotal study in late 2025. And then, working with the FDA for that single indication most likely is going to be a de novo pathway to go through it in 2026, 2027 type of timeframe. I often describe like this MCG project and the heart attack triage application is a starting point, because I do see this imaging modality as something that we will get better and better once we have more data and apply machine learning to it for future disease prediction and classification. Mm-hmm. So ACS is one. We've already seen studies showing that it can be used to track treatment effectiveness for hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. It can certainly have a place in electrophysiology because you're essentially looking at electrical currents in the heart non-invasively without intracardiac leads. So I really see this almost like a general purpose camera. But in the future, there will be a lot of software as a medical device built on top of it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
I'm sure it does to a lot of people. I'm No, it makes a great deal of sense. But I guess where your Sandbox AQ functions in a lot of different industries and verticals, is the medical device industry the most challenging? I mean, that's a long runway you're looking at, and I'm sure there are other businesses within Sandbox AQ that are getting better traction more quickly because they're working in less regulated, I would say less vital industries like medical devices and finding homes within hospitals. Where does the medical segment within Sandbox AQ kind of fit or compare to other verticals in the business, and is this seen as sort of more of the, not to take from your former company, but a moonshot program where, yeah, we may not see a product today, this year or next, but long term, we're really changing how healthcare will be delivered. So where does the medical device segment kind of fit or compare to other businesses within Sandbox AQ?
I would characterize AQ Med certainly as a longer term bet.
Yeah.
In fact, I would say the navigation team, using magnetic signal from the Earth for navigation purpose to reduce our reliance on GPS, is also like a little bit longer runway too, because they also is regulated, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's also the strength of Sandbox AQ is that we chose a portfolio approach with four business units that like some is a longer term bet, but we believe in the impact, and some is like a little bit more near term, for example, in cybersecurity and also in simulation, that immediately has like customer traction like today. So it's a balanced approach, I would hope.
And do you have some other projects that you envision working on? I mean, are all of your efforts being focused on On cardiac, I mean, if you look at a traditional medical device company, yeah, they've got a lead product and then a secondary product. Are you taking that strategy, or do things have to be approached differently when you're dealing with the technologies that you're dealing with?
I would say within cardiology, besides like acute coronary syndrome triage, we certainly begin to dabble on other indication within cardiology. Mm-hmm. And if I think even longer term, after tackling getting magnetic signal coming from the heart, the next one will be from the brain. Because like every single time I talk to a physician, after I talk about the heart, they always ask me, it's like, hey, what about the brain? Like, when can you have that? And there's a lot of research being done, devices being made in that area too. So we hope to, you know, through the learning of building this device, unshield it, easy to use, workflow integration, and then how to apply it to other areas will be the next step.
So just to bring this conversation back to your first experience with MedTech, where you worked with that physician and helped them create a kit and gave them immediate gratification. I can understand the ability in the satisfaction in getting that done short term. You're now in a project that's much longer term, much more meaningful, much more impactful, of course. How do you keep a team moving forward and keeping their eyes on the prize in developing a technology that isn't there yet, but when it is here, it's going to be a game changer?
I think to be successful in doing MedTech project, you have to really buy into the mission, right? Mm-hmm. We all know people who suffer from heart attack with like these disabling illnesses. It touches everybody. So when you work on this, like people are really passionate about it. One thing that I often say to the team is like, be eager to take action, but we have to be patient to see results. Mm-hmm. Results may not come back like immediately. And like, this reminds me of like my experience with like iRhythm. Like, you know, we came up with the idea during Stanford Biodesign, but iRhythm didn't IPO till 10 years later. Like, you know, when we were working at that time, it was like, oh, that's cool. We invented something. We filed some like patents and like it felt great to like win some competition and got seed money. But we didn't really know the impact of tech technology until like, you know, much later. So be eager to take action and be patient to see results. Like, that's the only way to kind of keep us going.
That's absolutely true. And I don't know if we got into the iRhythm story. What was your role in iRhythm? And I had that on my notes, but I kind of been, I don't see it listed in your profile at all. So what was your role at iRhythm again in the starting of that company? Because that's, again, you certainly had, to your point, that's been a long ongoing story that's only beginning to bear fruit over the last couple of years.
Yeah. So iRhythm came out of Stanford Biodesign.
Yeah.
From the four of us, Uday, myself, John, and Joe. Like, we went through the program. We did need finding. We landed on iRhythm as a technology. I remember building prototype, writing business plan, pitching to different competition, and like as a team of four, like that was my role there. Like, we're the original four people who come up with the idea and secure the IP there. Yeah, and like I said, like at that time, all the ingredients seems to be there. There's a CPT code. We're dealing, or basically replacing a really outdated technology of using cassette tape and wire to like do Holter monitoring.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it seems so obvious, and it still take a long time. So that just re-emphasize the point that you just made. Like, you know, it really is a long run.
Great. And just a final question. I mean, just more broadly about the incorporation of AI and technology into medical device development. I mean, what do you see this industry, medical devices, looking like in 5 to 10 years? Are we going to see more companies that look like a sandbox AQ that are really more tech than maybe med tech? And you can disagree with that assessment. Or do you see this, I don't know, what do you see this industry looking like in 5 to 10 years?
I think we will see more and more unusual partnerships, like, traditional med tech company, maybe partner with like an IT company to really make some big moves, like big bold moves, maybe what the industry is looking for. So I won't be surprised, because like being at Google X, like we saw that, right? A lot of the new moonshot ideas is around healthcare and it's being pursued by like a tech company. I believe they're roles for the two entities to play in, and like building the right partnership would be the key to unlock the potential.
All right. Well, Kit, it was a real pleasure talking to you and learning your story, and I'm sorry. In moments I seemed overwhelmed, but there's a lot to take in.
And I
look forward to following your progress and talking to you again in the future. Thanks for your time today.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
All right, well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Once again, make sure you subscribe to the Device Talks Podcast Network so you don't miss future episodes of this podcast or Intuitive Talks or our other great podcast. Reminder, Intuitive Talks is coming out next week. It's a great interview I did with one of their senior leaders, but we won't be putting out a Device Talks Weekly next week because we're taking time off to spend with our families, and we hope you're doing the same. No Device Talks Tuesdays next week. Device Talks Boston, however, is open for registration, so check that out. Go to boston.devicetalks.com. I'm also planning Device Talks Minnesota, which is happening on June 11th. So yeah, there's a lot going on over here. So just do us a favor, connect with us on LinkedIn. I'm Tom Salemi. Find me there. I'd like to be part of your MedTech conversations. Connect with Chris Newmarker there, of course. He's the editor of Mass Device. And of course, connect with Kayleen Brown, our Device Talks Managing Editor. If you connect with the three of us, you will be engaged, entertained, and informed. So don't miss out. So that is a wrap. Once again, no Device Talks Weekly next week. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and thanks for being part of Device Talks.